Welcome to Real Deal Recovery, where the focus is topic-based and centered on physical and emotional recovery from drugs and alcohol or any other self-destructive behavior. Here's your host, Stephen Gerard.
Hello and welcome. Today we have Eric Ramon joining us from Oakland, California. He is over 30 years clean, and Eric is going to share his experience, strength, and hope with us on the topic of diligence. The dictionary defines diligence as careful and persistent work or effort. Eric, great to have you with us today. Welcome to Real Deal Recovery.
Stephen, good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Eric, what was your life like prior to getting clean and sober, and what happened?
Well, prior to recovery, well, that's a lot of years, Stephen. I mean,
give us the last 10 prior to getting clean and sober.
Well, you know, I mean, I started using when I was about 11 years old. I guess that puts me around 1972. And I continued to use until I couldn't use any longer. And I ended up hitting bottom and getting clean in 1986, July of 1986. And to be quite honest with you, not all of those years were bad. There was a time early on, before my disease really progressed, that I had fun, and it worked for me. And you know, I started using when I was. I don't want to say that it was just horrible from the get-go, but eventually, as my disease progressed, I began to use more and more, and different drugs, harder drugs. I can't really pinpoint it, but it got to a point where it was no longer fun anymore, and it literally became a full-time job. And and this is not to say that in my early days of using, my life was not unmanageable. I mean, I barely got out of junior high school. I did not graduate from high school with my class in 1979. I was prone to mood swings and emotional outbursts. I fought a lot, and so there was unmanageability early on, but it progressively got worse and worse. And like I said, I got to a point in my addiction where it wasn't fun anymore, and it was a full-time job, and I did whatever I had to do to feed my addiction, so to speak, whether it be lie, cheat, steal, hustle, you name it. My disease took me to some of the deepest, darkest places of Oakland, California, and you know, by the time I hit bottom in July of 1986, I was, you know, running from dealers and running from the law, and not knowing how to stop. And that was having a desire to stop, for this insanity to just somehow subside, and not being able to. Not being able to obtain that, to stop. And it was a very, very hopeless existence, because I tried my own, I tried to change my life on my own. I tried to dress differently. I cut my hair differently. I thought if I looked like a square, I'd live like a square. I tried, you know, new friends, new places to live. Nothing seemed to work. It would slow down for a while, but eventually it would just pick back up and snowball, and I'd find myself in trouble, you know, facing another $1,000 day or some lost weekend. And it was just getting worse and worse and worse. And I didn't know where to go in the beginning. I didn't know about Charleston fellowships. I didn't know about treatment centers. I didn't know where to turn. I didn't know where to look in the phone book for drug addict or junkie or what have you. And I tried everything. I tried being a dealer. I thought if I could hold the bag, I could support a habit. And, it just got down to, I'm sorry, I can't sell your gram because I'm down to my last ounce, And it was a nightmare. It was a humiliating and degrading experience every day. And I was guilt ridden. I stole from my family. I stole from my employers. Like I said, I lied, cheated, and stole whatever I had to do. And so that's how it was. I really can't put it into that many more words. It was horrible. I lived the life that I would not wish upon my worst enemy. Not that I have any real enemies today, but I'm just using that as a figure of speech. I wouldn't wish it upon anybody. And I end up going through treatment in July of 86. And the last time I used was the 4th of July, 1986. That was the year they were unveiling the Statue of Liberty that had been restored. And there was a big party in the harbor. And I was at this friend of mine's house using. We had the TV off to the side with the volume turned low, and I could see the party in the harbor. And I had already gone to my first NA meeting approximately maybe a month or two before, and right on April of 86. So I believe that the seed was planted at my very first meeting. And I distinctly remember listening to this guy speak and share his story. And he used like I did, and he hadn't used for like 3 years, which to me at the time just seemed like an eternity. And I still wasn't quite ready yet. I got a book, and actually my sister took me to my very first meeting, because she was really the first person that I had ever admitted to that I think I have a drug problem and I need help and I don't know where to go. And she had a friend whose brother was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and they suggested, well, why don't you take him to a meeting? So she took me to this meeting on a Saturday morning at the Alta Bates Hospital in Berkeley at 10:30. And what is ironic is I was born at the Alta Bates Hospital 25 years earlier. And here was back at the same place, going, what the hell, this is not living. And anyway, to make a long story short, I heard the speaker, he used like I did, and he hadn't used for like 3 years. And but it's been, it's been a real process. I still didn't fully understand the disease of addiction. My disease was very, very strong. See, when I was using, I ran around Chinatown, and I hung out with these really unsavory characters down in Chinatown, and we got into a lot of trouble together, so I'm at this meeting, and my disease was, you know, looking, you know, through my eyes, I saw white people and black people, and I was going, well, I don't know if this place is for me, and I continued to go. I said, I'll try it out, but kind of half-heartedly. And I went to meetings a little bit. I put a 2 days together, go out and use, put a week together, go out and use. I think I went 2 weeks or 13 days once, white-knuckled it. Went back out and used, and finally in July of 86, you know, I think the key for me is I continued to go. Whether I believed it or not, I just continued to go. And my moment of truth came. I believe I had my first awakening of the spirit, and I hit bottom on July 4th, 1986 at about 10:30 at night. And, you know, I finally got to that point where I was willing to admit that I was truly, truly powerless over my addiction, and my life had become unmanageable. And there was no control, and it was never about control. I never had control over it. And it was that juncture that, you know, things started to change. So in a nutshell, that was like my first, that was my 10 years leading up to what I consider getting into recovery.
And you've been clean and sober now 30 years, and I've known you for about 20, and of course I know you as a very disciplined and focused person. Since the topic for this podcast is diligence, how have you developed your focus and work ethic over the last 30 years?
Well, over the last 30 years, I don't know if recovery in and of itself has given me a work ethic. Recovery to me has given me the ability to focus. See, when I was using, and even in earlier recovery, I lived with an immense amount of fear. Fear of people, fear of places, fear of new things. I suffered from very low self-esteem. You know, for many years, I just, you know, I for a long time, I was a florist by trade when I was using. And I was just this drug addict florist running around Oakland and Berkeley, California. I always managed to hold some type of job when I was using. I was a working stiff and kind of a jack of all trades, just floating from one job to the next without any real direction or purpose. It's not like that's what I really wanted to do. That's just what I did. And I kind of felt like that was my destiny, that I was just destined to be this drug addict florist for the rest of my life, and I was going to die that way. And whether by drug overdose, or someone's going to put a bullet in my head, or however. I just thought those were the cards that I drew in life, and I couldn't do anything besides that. And And as I got, you know, I got clean, and I went to treatment. I ended up living at a halfway house in Oakland for about 11 months, and then at a year clean. 1987, I right around a year clean, I decided that, you know, I came to the realization that I could do something different in life. Whatever that was, I didn't know, but I this feeling came over me, and I guess maybe just a little less fear through working the program, just a little bit more self-esteem and feeling of self-worth. And I decided that I wanted to go back to school. And first get a high school diploma, because I had been a high school dropout since 1979, and my brother and sister both had, their paths were very different than mine. They went to high school right after high school. They studied hard in high school. They got in right after high school. They got into good colleges. One went to UC San Diego. The other went off to UCLA. They went to college. They graduated. It was something that, because I was a horrible student. I failed miserably at junior high school and high school, and I ended up dropping out. But part of me always said, one of these days, I'm going to go back to school. Like when I was using. That was thought. I'm going to go back to school. And of course, if I continued to use, it was never going to happen. I was going to end up either dead or in jail, or worse yet, just wandering around aimlessly for the rest of my life. And I had this idea that I wanted to go back to school, and I wanted to go away like my brother and my sister had. So I sat down with my family and decided, you know, I am going to go. I want to move to Seattle and try this school thing. And I was going to give myself a year, and if I didn't like it, then I would do something else. But I wanted to at least give it a try. So I moved to Seattle in 1987, and I started the process. And I went to MECOM, I checked into our program, And what I learned initially, outside of the subject matter, is I realized I was really rather ignorant about the world. I mean, I think this is part of the disease. I mean, I lived in this and ran around Oakland, California, more specifically Chinatown, and saw a lot of shit go down, and yet, you know, I thought that I had seen it all. But the fact of the matter is, I hadn't seen really anything. And so I was like a sponge. When I went back to school, I was just like, oh my God, I'm learning. And I was just wanting to absorb as much information as I could. And going back to school helped me work through a lot of fears. And you know, we talk about diligence and commitment. I was not the most disciplined person. I didn't lack mental acuity, but I lacked discipline. And that's getting up regularly, eating regularly, going regularly, learning how to come home to study, things of that nature. And that was a learned process. It didn't come overnight. I can remember, you know, pacing back and forth in front of a classroom, no debate. Should I go in? Shouldn't I go in? Should I go in? Shouldn't I go in? I don't really feel like it. you know, because that's how I was when I was in high school. I just never went. And I don't know where it came from, but I have to believe that, you know, the program gave me the ability to realize when it's just my head talking. And I would just, there was times where I just like, I would just like literally run into the classroom, sit down, and end the insanity before my head took me somewhere else and I'm down at the donut shop. So I just kept at it. And it's kind of like just going on blind faith. It's like, okay, if I go inside this classroom, everything's going to be okay. And once I'm in there, settle down, it's fine. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of how I felt.
And you're going to meetings regularly during this whole time to help you get through this adversity?
All the time. Yeah. All the time. Went to meetings all the time. When I moved to my first year of recovery, when I lived in this halfway house, I worked and went to meetings. That's all I did. Most of my activities, weekends, NA dances, AA dances, CA dances, even then at the time, was very big in the Bay Area. And they had many functions. Excuse me.
Eric, what have you been doing for the last 30 years to keep the program fresh?
Fresh? I mean, I love recovery. I've been blessed, you know, with a second chance at life. I love service. Early on, that, you know, what I did back in 86 and 87 and 80 and all those years, my recovery kept me clean then, but I need today in the here and now to keep me clean today, because what I did 25 years ago is not going to keep me clean now. I need to, so that's what helps me keep me fresh is coming to terms with this disease concept that I have, this disease that is trying to kill me every day. Because even though I haven't used in a long, long time, there are times where my disease is still alive and well. I thank God that the actual compulsion to use, to seek out and use drugs has, you know, for the most part, been lifted. I mean, I can't remember when was the last time I had a real compulsion to go use. And I, you know, and over the last 30 years, I've gone through 30 years of life. I've had disappointment. I've had trauma, sadness, happiness. See, because when I was using, I used for everything. If something great happened, I wanted to celebrate. If something bad happened, I wanted to blot it out. So I used. I just used. It was just a way of life for me. I could cope. I remember painting my mother's bathroom one year. And it cost me $200 to paint her bathroom because I needed a couple grams of cocaine to get through the process. You know, I mean, that's how I was. And so even now, coming to that realization and believing that, you know, I have this disease, it's you know, It's not too hard to keep my recovery fresh.
Eric,
I think the key for me, let me just finish this. I think the key for me is, as my life has changed, I'm married, I have certain responsibilities I did not have before. It's very important for me to keep a balance and still not get consumed with work. and balance it with my recovery.
Eric, I have one final question for you. You know, for those that are, you know, really struggling with diligence in their affairs, what suggestions do you have for them?
You know, I'm a firm believer in prayer, in meditation. If there are new people out there struggling to, I just talked to a dear friend of mine who's moved back to the Seattle area. She's been in and out of the program for a lot of years, struggling. And I can hear her in her voice how it's hard for her to get to a meeting. You know, it's hard for her to get to go to a meeting. If I can make any suggestion, just go to as many meetings. Don't listen to your head. Just go. Just go to a meeting, pray, read the book, do what is suggested. Because, you know, when I first came around, I had this attitude like, well, how long do I have to go to these goddamn meetings? And my first sponsor told me, just keep going, no matter what your head tells you. Just keep going until you can't wait to get back to your next one. And I was going, what? But I followed that suggestion. I just kept going to meetings, whether I wanted to or not. I just put one foot in front of the other and went. And I asked my higher power for guidance. And sure enough, there came a time, this point, where I remember sitting at my family's house having dinner, and it's like, good God, I can't wait to get to the meeting tonight. And then I realized something had changed. I had gone to so many meetings where I couldn't wait to get back to my next one. And that was a marked difference. That to me would symbolize that I was in recovery because I was seeking it. And I was just down. So that's diligence is hard. Discipline is hard. Those are, based on my experience, most addicts lack discipline. It's part of the disease. You know, my disease tells me to slough off. You don't have to go. Even now, your life is different. You're a productive member of society. You have a little bit of savings. You wouldn't have to chase the bag. I mean, this is at 30 years clean. You could go out with your colleagues from the office and have a little glass of wine. It lies to me. So I have to, I'm still trying to save my life daily. It's a day at a time thing because I have this disease. I've had it all my life. I will have it to the day I die, a day at a time. And it's my responsibility to do what I need to do on a day-to-day basis to stay out of active, not to pick up that first one. And I'm still very serious about it. And the more time I come around, and the more my life has grown, and I feel the more I have to lose. So I still go to meetings regularly. I don't, you know, I don't go. Generally, I don't go to two meetings a day anymore. I try to go 2-3 times a week, regularly. I still sponsor. I still love being of service. like they say, you know, one addict helping another is without parallel. I believe that. I love helping newcomers. I spent a half an hour on the phone with this friend of mine recently, sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And whether she decides to go to a meeting, whether she stays clean, continues on in recovery, that's between her and her higher power. I have no control over that. You know, but I still like being part of the process and like sharing my stories and my experience with recovery. Just like I love doing this. This is just a great opportunity, Stephen, and you know, I appreciate it.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us tonight. And thanks again.
You're very welcome.
Stephen Gerard is available for sober coaching and consulting by visiting SoberCoachNYC.com, offering additional support, guidance, and motivation for people in all phases of recovery. Just visit SoberCoachNYC.com. That's SoberCoachNYC.com to set up a complimentary life-changing discussion. Make a decision to change your life.
Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. If you find this content of value, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. This way, the pod will be delivered directly to you. If you'd like to suggest a topic or get a hold of me for any reason, please email me at realdealrecoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's realdealrecoverypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Have a stellar week. And remember, recovery is not a spectator sport. Get in the ring.